Hi, this is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and I welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. This week, our focus text is going to be Jesus' words in Matthew 7, 12 through 14, where Matthew records Jesus as saying, "So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets. Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it." This week, I'm actually at home. It's nice to be home. I've been gone since about the end of June, so I'm finally back in West Virginia trying to get caught up on all the stuff that just you get behind in when you're on the road this much. My lawn looks like a jungle, so I'm working on getting that tamed this week as well. But I want to get this out to you also, and I want to take you on what will seem like a detour this week. It'll seem like this is completely off topic at first, but I'm hoping you'll see the relevance of this next passage to Jesus' Sermon on the Mount as we continue. We're going to be looking at Moses' words in Exodus 21, 7 through 11, where he says, "If a man sells his daughter as a servant, she is not to go free as male servants do. If she does not please the master who has selected her for himself, he must let her be redeemed. He has no right to sell her to foreigners, because he has broken faith with her. If he selects her for his son, he must grant her the rights of a daughter. If he marries another woman, he must not deprive the first one of her food, clothing, and marital rights. If he does not provide her with these three things, she is to go free without any payment of money." Now, sexual slavery, or being sold as a wife, was common in the ancient world. In the Old Testament, the taking of multiple wives was condoned and recorded many times throughout the Old Testament. You can find this in Exodus 21:10, Deuteronomy 21:15, Genesis 25:1. You can cross-reference that with 1 Chronicles 1:32. Genesis 34, chapter 30, verse 4, and 31, verse 17, cross-referenced with Genesis 35, 22, 2 Samuel 12, 11, cross-referenced with 2 Samuel 20, verse 3, and you can also find a note about this in Erdman's Dictionary of the Bible on page 273. An Israelite father could sell his unmarried daughters into servitude with the expectation or understanding that the master or his son would eventually marry her. Now, Jewish and Christian commentators alike agree that this referred to the sale of a daughter who, quote-unquote, is not arrived to the age of 12 years and a day, and that this sale was the result of the father encountering poverty. And here is the million-dollar question when we look at this week. How can we allow the Jehovah of the Old Testament to not immediately remove this detestable practice from among the Hebrew people that he's chosen? How can we allow him to actually accommodate it for a time, temporarily, choosing to reform the practice rather than abolishing it, choosing rather to try and kind of safeguard it from further abuse, on top of the abuse, which if you think about it, which is it already inherently has, in order to meet a people where they are, to meet their own expectations of what they believe a deity should look like and what they would consider a god worthy of being worshipped. Now, don't misunderstand me. The practice of trafficking young girls, especially under the age of 12, is horrific alone. And then to consider that this was for the intention that once she turned 12, she would become one of the multiple wives of the man she was sold to, or possibly one of the multiple wives of the man's son. There's no way to justify this from any angle. It's just horrific, no matter how you look at it. But again, here's the question. Can we allow Jehovah to meet a certain people within a certain culture where they are at, and meeting them temporarily, even meeting their own expectations of what he should be like, while patiently moving them the whole time, slowly away from the horrific practices of their culture over years of growth, years of development, until the culture can rightly understand him and eventually become a people and a culture that in the future would rightly put on display what he is like, in contrast to what they looked like when he got a hold of them right out of Egypt. Now, as we all know, within any culture, if you want to get them to follow you, if you want to, them to make lasting changes within that culture itself, you can't just come in and bulldozer over their entire way of life. You have to work with them, not against them, slowly transforming them little by little into something other than what they were when you found them. Far from Exodus 21, 7 through 11, far from that being a revelation of what God is really like, which is what some students of the Bible do, it's rather a reflection, I think, of what the people were like that God was trying to reach. If you want to find out what God is really like, Exodus 21, 7 through 11 is not the place to look at all. The place to look at if you want to know what God looks like is Jesus. In Hebrews 1, 1 through 3, and this is my own personal translation of it, but it says, "In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at multiple times and in multiple personalities." And some of the personalities that we find in the Old Testament are jealous, petty, unjust, unforgiving, controlling, vindictive, bloodthirsty, misogynistic, homophobic, racist, infanticidal, genocidal, filicidal, pestilential, megalomaniacal, sadomasochistic, and capriciously malevolent. Now that list comes from Richard Dawkins' book, The God Delusion. Those are some of the multiple personalities we find in the Old Testament at times that has caused a lot of people significant questions and how they could follow Jesus. And yet some of these very different from Jesus pictures of God can be seen there, even if it's just by a surface reading of some of those Old Testament stories. The author of Hebrews goes on to say, "But in these last days he's spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, and through whom also he made the universe. The Son is the radiance of God's glory, the exact representation of his being." So many, when we look at the Old Testament, it's important to remember the Old Testament is much more a revelation of the culture God was trying to reach back then. Once again, if you want to know what God's like, strip away all the accommodations and the concessions, and you get a God that looks like Jesus. In John 1, 18, the radical revelation of God and Jesus was so intense that the Apostle John, who was raised with Moses and Elijah, these Old Testament stories, the Law and the Prophets, he wrote, "No one has ever even seen God till they meet Jesus." And that's in John 1, 18. Jesus said himself, recorded by John in John 14, 9, Jesus said, "Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father." So what does this have to do with our topic this week? Well, I want to take a minute and look at the concept of lex talionis. Lex talionis is the Latin label for the broader class of legal systems that specify formulaic penalties for specific crimes, which are thought to be fitting. The penalties are fit the severity of the crime. Some propose that this was at least in part intended to prevent excessive punishment at the hands of either an avenging private party or an avenging state. What I'm meaning by this is lex talionis, the most common expression of it is an eye for an eye. Yet it's also well known that lex talionis does not exclusively refer to literal eye-for-eye codes of justice, but again, it's an entire legal system labeled as penal, or rather a form of justice that is punitive, where the punishment fits the crime as a means of preventing, some people feel once again, preventing severe punishments for crime. The punishment must meet the crime, must be equal to or relevant to the crime. And Jesus taught in Matthew 5, 38 through 45, and again, this is another personal paraphrase of this passage. We've looked at it again. It says, "You've heard that it was said, eye for eye, tooth for tooth." Now that's the whole paradigm of lex talionis. It says, "But I tell you, do not use retaliation, even if it has been authorized by your law against an evil person. Instead, if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to them the other cheek also. And if anyone wants to sue you and take away your chiton, which is their undergarment, hand over your hamation as well," which was the overgarment. If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles, and give to the one who asks you, and do not turn away from the one who wants to borrow from you, even if you are on the verge of jubilee. You have heard that it was said, love your fellow Israelite, hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies too, and pray for those who even persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven, for he causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good. He sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. Now, for a fuller exposition of Jesus' teaching in this passage, I want to recommend to you the presentation entitled The Way of Peace from Arizona at the Putting Jesus Back into the Gospel series that we've just uploaded on the website, renewedheartministries.com. Jesus sought to lead us, I believe, away from doing life via lex talionis, this eye for eye paradigm, and rather to what others have called the golden rule. Look at it in Matthew 7:12-14, and this is where he actually contrasts it. In everything, and again, this is a personal paraphrase, but in everything, do to others as you would have them do to you. That's the golden rule. For this was the intended goal of where the law and the prophets were always headed. Enter them through the narrow gate of the golden rule. For the gate of lex talionis is wide, and the road of lex talionis is easy, but it leads to the whole world being blind, toothless, and annihilated. There are many who are presently on that path. For the gate of the golden rule is narrow, and this road is hard, but it leads to life. And there are so few presently who have discovered it and are traveling on it. Other students of Jesus have also, like Jesus, said similar statements to what we find in Matthew 7:12-14. Mahatma Gandhi said, an eye for an eye, in the end, makes everybody blind. Martin Luther King, working from Mahatma Gandhi, said the old law of an eye for an eye leaves everyone blind. And Fiddler on the Roof, the quote is made, then the whole world would be blind and toothless. And the question I want you to consider this week is whether or not lex talionis itself fully manifests the character of God that we see in Jesus, or whether even lex talionis, even though it's a safeguard against abuse on one side, that whether or not we find in it still Jehovah in the Old Testament doing the same activity once again that we find him doing with other temporary cultural accommodations such as slavery and polygamy and the treatment of women, race-based preferential treatment, nationalism, genocidal violence, and even Israel itself having a king. Do we see lex talionis possibly even fitting into that category, especially in trying to make sense out of how Jesus said that was good for then, but now I want you to learn how to turn the other cheek? It's just a question, but I think it's a question worth asking this week, especially when we're striving to no longer live ourselves after the lex talionis, eye for an eye, but to actually begin practicing Jesus' peace teachings in turning the other cheek. And seeking to answer that question, I also find it ironic that in the reinstatement of capital punishment, which was a form of lex talionis, an expression of lex talionis, by the Christian church as a result of the Constantinian shift in the 4th century, it's interesting to look at that contrasted with the abandonment of capital punishment, which is again an expression of lex talionis, by those who were disciples of Jesus for the first 3 centuries of Christian history. They would rather have their own blood shed than shed, for any reason, the blood of another, since it was forbidden to even take life. This is very different from the stoning world of the Old Testament. Israel practiced capital punishment for sure, and the new Israel of the first century, which was defined as those who were endeavoring to follow Jesus, they did not practice capital punishment. After Jesus, it seems that the church, following the teachings of Jesus, abandoned the eye for an eye ethics, only to see the church reinstate those eye for an eye ethics, the penal codes, once again when Christianity and the empire became wedded under Constantine. It's a lot to ponder for sure, but it's something to think about this week. Heart group application, I want you to go back to Matthew 7:12-14. Spend some thoughtful time each day this week intentionally meditating on what it means for the rule of doing to others what you would have them do to you to be the narrow gate, and the rule of an eye for an eye to be the broad path that everybody follows, but it leads everybody to being destroyed. Write down any thoughts. Number two, write down any thoughts, any questions, insights, or inspiration that Jesus gives you during your daily time with him on this topic. And then next, number three, next week, share what you discover with your heart group. In short, whether lex talionis can be explained as an accommodation or not, we can't live a life based on the practice of lex talionis and practice the golden rule both simultaneously. And to the degree that we practice the golden rule, by definition, we will not be practicing lex talionis, the eye for an eye, but we'll be practicing the way of forgiveness and love instead. And Jesus showed us it's one or the other. My prayer for all of us, myself included, is that Jesus will help us learn what this way of salvation and restoration and redemption, what it looks like in our daily lives. There's no formulas, there's no three steps, but as we walk with Jesus day by day as his disciples, allowing him to teach us, I am quite assured that Jesus will be guiding us. And we'll be returning to this topic in the future, I'm sure. But Jesus gave us three clear examples in Matthew 5, 38 through 45, of what the golden rule, rather than the way of lex talionis, looks like in our daily lives. So may our understanding as well as our practice continue to deepen as we seek to follow Jesus, who called himself the way. This week, keep living in love, following the example of the truth and the grace that we see in the life of Jesus, until the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. I love you guys. We'll see you next week.